Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the power of compassion. And the number to call for coaching on having what you want in any area of your life is 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And as always, I like to set the table at the beginning of the show, just talk about a few things. One of the few perks, and it's weird to talk about them as perks, but they're one of the few perks of going through a period of loss or crisis or suffering even, is when you come out the other side, and I don't know if you noticed, but you actually pretty much always do come out the other side. You often come out stronger than you went in. And the strength that you find in dealing with that crisis, it doesn't leave you, even when the crisis has passed. And I've told this story a couple of years ago, I think I told this story but on the show, but my first real experience of that came in my second year of doing a theater degree. And I went to one of those very competitive schools where, you know, look left, look right, only one of you will still be here in 3 years, kind of a schools. And you know, it was competitive because the school was a feeder program for a lot of the theaters in New York and some of the movie things in L.A. And it was stressful. I found it stressful. And our slightly post-adolescent minds kind of crumbled under the pressure. And my year, you know, there were like 25 of us, two of whom attempted suicide, and one of whom, who happened to be my best friend, wound up getting committed to a mental institution. So we didn't all deal with it elegantly. Now, I'd love to tell the version of the story where Super Coach Michael Neal handled the situation with ease and grace, but reality, I'm pretty sure I spent the vast majority of the final 6 weeks of the term drunk. I seem to remember there was a lunchtime happy hour, and then there was the two-for-one happy hour, and then there was the midnight happy hour, which we could go to after rehearsals. And it really, that was just at the time, that was how I tried to cope with it, and it didn't really help, but there was a quote I remember reading at the time from Samuel Johnson, who said, "Knowing one is going to die in a fortnight focuses the mind wonderfully." And even though I was not in the best state of mind, I really began to become clear in the final days before they were going to make the decision about whether or not I was going to be cut from this program, that I wasn't the only one who was being affected by it. And in one particular moment of clarity, I realized if I was going to get through the program and some of the people that I'd spent 2 years training with weren't, I would actually feel their pain as acutely as I felt my pain. And that was interesting to me. I hadn't had that experience before. You know, when you're young, you tend to live in your own world. And that was just a moment where I really felt someone else's pain and just with amazing clarity. And I was introduced at the time to a Buddhist practice called Tonglen, and it was a meditation, and what they had you do was breathe in the pain and suffering of others and breathe out kindness, love, and compassion. And that was interesting to me because I'd always heard you're supposed to avoid pain and that, you know, pain was bad, or you know, you might have to put up with some, but, you know, you really wanted to do whatever you could to not feel it and to hide from it. And what I learned from Tonglen is that if you're willing to open up, if you're not scared of other people's pain, if you actually even seek it out, you can help heal it. You can be part of the healing of it. And I remember at the time thinking, like, there's something nuts about I'm going to deal with my pain by taking on even more of it from everyone else. The reality was that as I did that, as I opened up to compassion, I felt better. Because I sort of realized, you know, if I was going down, and I was pretty sure I was at the time, I was not only not going to take anyone down with me, I was going to do all that I could to go down alone and help lift everyone up. And I recently came across a photo of the teachers. It was like a panel of teachers who I had to face on the final day, decision day. And they were posed very seriously, like a firing squad. And they told me that I'd been chosen to remain in the program. And I burst into tears. and particularly one of the things they said to me that I just couldn't make sense of was how strong they felt that I'd been throughout the whole process. I didn't feel strong. I didn't feel worthy. I didn't think positively. I didn't believe in myself. I did survive. I did make it through. And better still, so did some of the other people whose own fear and worry and sadness I'd been breathing in on a daily basis. And what I learned was not only that with compassion, through compassion, that we're a lot stronger than we sometimes think we are, but that we can access that strength most easily. We can find it most easily when we use it to support the people around us. So we're going to talk about compassion, but we're also going to just talk about having what you want in any area of your life. The numbers to get in, 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And we're going to begin in Las Vegas with Barton. Barton, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. I just want to tell you, oh, my gosh, it works. Oh, my gosh.
I just want to tell you,
I feel so good. I had no idea that we actually are in this state of mind, that we can live in this state of mind. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I did a lot of meditation. I had a horrible last year. I mean, like the past decade was really rough for me, and I went through several multiple nervous breakdowns. You know, my finances were really bad. All of this stuff was really bad, and I was just focusing on that, and I've been really, really working with your program amongst others and working with a lot of visual and just really thinking and positive and just putting in, and it came to me, and it's, oh my gosh, I didn't know people live like this. I had no idea. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm so happy, and I just wanted to tell the callers too, just keep doing it. Just keep pushing. I mean, positive, just happy. Think positive. I mean, just things are going to work out. Things are going to do. I mean, no matter what you're in, you know, I mean, I was in debt like over $100,000, you know, things are going to start working out. I'm still in debt, but it's coming back. You know, it's that things are falling together for me. And I just wanted to tell you, thank you. And I'm very grateful.
Oh, you're very welcome. That's a nice way to start the show.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you. I got through to Wayne Dyer too. It was really great. I had to tell him too. It was just wonderful. So that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. And you're welcome.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, that wasn't I never a bad way to start a show, I suppose. I have nothing to add. Let's move on. Let's go to Jay in LA. Jay, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm just looking. I'm a compassionate person. I know I am, and I feel people's pain, and I'm compassionate towards it. And I'm going through something now. The last few years, specifically this last year, just horrendous pain. I'm going through a divorce, and now it's become a custody battle. And my ex-husband is he is like embodiment of pain, childhood blueprint pain. Like he's just awful, just an awful person. And horrible, and weirdly enough, the whole system keeps rewarding him, like the court system and the, you know, the police and different kinds of stuff. And so I'm trying to maintain compassion for myself, and I still feel compassion for him, and it's not working.
Well, how would you know if it was working? What would be different?
I guess a feeling in my heart, results with our child, calmness, like a respect, maybe he'd stop being so angry all the time. I mean,
so
I don't know how
can we start with the feeling in your heart?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Cause compassion comes from a seeing. It comes from a recognition that the only reason that somebody acts unkindly towards us or towards anyone is because they're in pain in some way. You know, Don Miguel Ruiz talks about imagine a world where everybody had a skin disease. And
yeah.
It was the terrible open wounds. And if you brushed up against the wounds, they're going to strike out at you, even though it was the wound that caused them the pain, not you. You just happened to brush up against it.
Right.
That doesn't mean that we have to put up with a lot of crap. That doesn't mean we have to, that doesn't mean we have to stay in a bad situation. It doesn't mean we have to work through it. But it starts with the seeing, because when you see that, another metaphor, my friend Greg Bear, who's been on the show before, he's got a metaphor where he says, imagine that you're on holiday and you're sitting by the side of the pool and it's beautiful and you're finally getting the chance to relax after everything that's gone on. And there's, you know, some kid splashing near you and you're kind of trying your best to ignore it. And, hey, he's just having fun and I'm trying to read my book. And the splashing just gets more and more. And you're sitting there going, my God, we paid all this money. I mean, shouldn't they have a separate kids pool and blah, blah, blah. And you finally look down and you realize, oh, he's not splashing. He's drowning.
Oh, yeah.
It would not take you a second before all of that noise in your head went away and you did whatever you knew to do to help save the kid.
Right. Well, I tried to do that in our marriage.
So stay with me, Jay, because I'm not actually talking about behavior. I'm not talking about, therefore, you should go save your husband because he's just drowning. Okay. I'm talking about if you can see, and you can't make yourself see it, right? If I want you to see the view from my window, it doesn't matter how vividly I describe it. If you're not at my window, you can't see it right now.
Right.
But if you can see that his behavior really is coming from that, whatever it is, it doesn't make it okay. It doesn't mean you put up with it. It doesn't mean you don't take action to protect your child and all that stuff. It just means the feeling in your heart stays open.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want to start there, because behaviorally, look, you're going to do the best you can. But if you can do it from that place of compassion and well-being inside yourself, not that you have to, not that you should, but if you can, your experience will be completely different.
I hope so. I've been holding that place of compassion for him while still standing up and speaking out and trying to be strong. But it's been 2 years of going through the vortex of court and the system, and it's not letting up. It is not. And I'm going.
So it sounds like you're expecting compassion to work.
I am. Yeah, I am.
Right. It's not that kind. From my experience, it's not that kind of thing.
Okay.
Compassion doesn't guarantee you get a result. Compassion is about the state of mind you get to be in and experience for yourself as you go through whatever is going on.
Mm.
Results come about because of, partly what we do and partly what happens.
You know,
with the best will in the world, none of us control the universe. And there are absolutely things that make certain results more likely than others. But outside of that, it's just not our call how things turn out.
So how to stay in a field, how to stay in the state of compassion when you have somebody who is, he's an external family member now, somebody that I still hold a place for because he's my son's father, continues.
So tell me a little bit about your wonderful life.
I live in a beautiful place. I have, very healthy. I have really great friends and family. And
okay, so you're doing this in that, there's this, and I know, I mustn't grumble, but I don't mean that. I'm not talking about convincing yourself that it's okay when it isn't.
Okay.
Okay. What I'm talking about is when you're not thinking about your husband and all the horrible things that he's done, is doing, or the system and all the injustices it isn't recognizing and all of that. In those moments, even if they're few and far between right now, do you recognize that that feels very different?
Yes.
So rather than think of it necessarily in terms of, I need to maintain this state of compassion because good people are compassionate people, which is kind of hard, especially when things aren't going the way you want them to.
Right.
Think just in terms of, if you can see even a little that the angst that you're experiencing around this is actually a function of the thoughts you're thinking about it, not the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to experience more peace, more of that peace that's there when you're not thinking about it.
Well, how do you... And how do you shut down those thoughts, or how do you avoid
This is the really cool thing. You don't have to shut them down. Just stop dancing with them. In other words, let's say, we're going to do the dating show for thoughts. Okay. Thought number one, introduce yourself to Jay. Hi, I'm just kind of wondering, what kind of delicious food, I could be having for lunch, after the show. Fantastic. Thought number two, I'm just thinking about how horrible the system is and how awful it is and how I can't stand it and how it's totally unfair and why is it set up to reward people who do terrible things. And thought number three, I wonder whether, like, the blue dress or the red dress this morning.
Okay.
You get to choose which of those thoughts you're going to hang out with.
Okay.
There, it's not, as far as I know, I do not know a way of making a thought go away and never coming back. I do absolutely know how to not have sex with one.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And what you'll find, and I can absolutely tell you this from experience and to the level of a guarantee, is that the less time you spend dating those thoughts about injustice and your husband and the system and all that, the more, not only will more good feelings have the space to come through, because that's our natural state of being, but you will have space in your head for some insights and some inspired actions.
Okay.
So that if there is something else to be done, it's only into a quiet mind that it's going to come. When your mind's full of all that stuff, there's no room for the deeper thought, for the I've never thought of that, but I wonder if blah, 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 blah. If you can,
right,
to the best of your ability, and this is where compassion for yourself comes in, recognizing you ain't going to get this right in one go. And that's okay, because you're human, I'm assuming. Am I safe in that assumption? Yeah,
yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so, given that, in that sort of calmer space, in that quieter mind, in that more beautiful feeling, that's where our insights and inspirations come in.
They do.
And, that's where we can hear our wisdom that tells us when to stay and when to go, when to push and when to back off, when to accept and when to kick ass.
Right. Thank you.
And you're very welcome. So that sounds like you got that.
It did. It cut right through it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Michael. Okay.
All right. It's so hard when you're in the middle of it, whatever it is, to see it. It's like the universe is made of energy, right? We know this. We know this from physics. We know this from metaphysics, right? You and I are energy. The sound waves that you're hearing me on are energy. Our thoughts are energy, right? And somehow through this magical thing that we've got a mathematical formula for that says E equals MC squared, we also know that energy and matter are the same. They're made of the same stuff. It's like I can plant a seed, but I can't grow a flower. Whatever it is that causes a seed to grow into a flower, I can't make that happen. But I can create circumstances. I can create a situation that makes it more likely to happen, that will make it easier for that to happen. But it's the life force, it's mind, it's whatever it is that's behind life that causes all of that to happen. And what brings it into being is thought. We have a thought, and if we really dwell on that thought, it starts to become real. One of my coaches, Steve Hardison, he talks about dipping a candle wick, that to make a candle, you take a wick, that's like a thought, and you dip it in wax. You speak it, either out loud in your head or out loud outside of your head. And each time you do, a little bit of wax sticks to it and you let it dry. And then the next time you dip it in, because it's got more surface area, more wax sticks to it. And it becomes a little more tangible. It becomes a little more solid. And then each time you dip that wick, each time you do it, it becomes more and more solid until people are going, hey, look at that candle, and they can see it too. Now, if what you're creating, if the thoughts you're creating with are about things you want to create in your life, are about wonderful things, then you get more of that. If they're about the problems and the things that are wrong and the thing, you'll get more of that too. It will seem more real. But here's the trick. It's not don't think it, because I don't know anyone who can do that for a sustained period of time. You can sort of train yourself through meditation to slow the thoughts down and occasionally experience not thinking for 20 minutes twice a day before you go to work and when you get home at night and all that. But for most of us, we're going to think. But consciousness is our ability to see the process, to see thoughts creating form from energy, from the formless. I'm getting really esoteric here for this show, but just bear with me, because I think it'll kind of make sense of everything that we talk about if you take a bit of time with it. And so if you want to make a real change in your life, a lot of us we start by trying to change the result, trying to change the form. Then we come to Hay House and we learn, oh, I'll change the thought if I just think different things. But have you noticed that's not so easy? And that even when you can do it, it's not necessarily sustainable. And what I found is the place that makes the biggest difference is the lift in your consciousness. As you become more conscious of how you are creating whatever experience it is that you're having, that experience becomes a little bit less real to you, becomes less solid, a little bit more fluid. And because it's more fluid, it's a lot easier to change. If you're still with me, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Anne-Marie in Montreal. Anne-Marie, what can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm so happy to talk to you again. I've just listening to what you've been talking about and with your last caller and everything, I wonder this could be pertinent to my situation. I'm married. I have a great husband and great relationship, and we're really happy and stuff. And I find myself sort of on this issue always sort of dwelling, and I'm kind of asking myself, you know, maybe you have a different insight or a different perspective on it. It's just like about doing chores and stuff and dividing up tasks. And me feeling like I do more and feeling like, you know, he doesn't, the tasks that he's agreed to do in the house, he doesn't always do them. He does do them. Sometimes he doesn't always do them, or he often sort of half does them. And I feel like a nag for always bringing it up. And I'm just wondering if there's another way or a fresh perspective.
Let me just offer some fresh perspective rather than another way, because the other way will present itself from the fresh perspective.
Okay.
One of my mentors is a man named Bill Cumming. You can read about him at a place called the Boothby Institute online. And he talks about 200% relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And, most of us think of a relationship as 50-50. I'll do my bit, you do your bit. Mm-hmm. And then we get really caught up in, well, hang on, it's become 60-40. Isn't right. It's 70-30. Well, okay, it's 55-45, I guess the balance, and last week it was 45-55, so I guess, we get into this whole game. A 200% relationship says, I am going to take 100% responsibility for our home, for whatever it is, and I'm going to request that the person I'm in a relationship with takes 100% responsibility for it too.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that when there's something that wants and needs to be done, it's done. Whether it's done by you today or me tomorrow or whichever way it is. Now, admittedly, if you're trying to have a 200% relationship and the person that you're with doesn't want to play that game, well, that's going to ultimately lead to a sense of kind of going, well, why are we playing this game?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't sound to me like that's necessarily going to be a problem with you.
No.
That if you take it out of the realm of, okay, distribution of tasks, and let's try and be fair with, which is just hard in a relationship. We didn't come together to evenly distribute our tasks. We came together because we like hanging out with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we wanted to build a home and build a family together and whatever else. But yes, there are things to be done. That if you make that one agreement together, not the agreement about who's going to do what, but the agreement that you're both going to take 100% responsibility for the house as well as everything else that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'll look like you're doing more, and sometimes it might look like he's doing more.
Okay.
Out of that 100-100, worst case, you get the sense you're not sitting there waiting for him to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Best case, you really get that, boy, it's amazing what you can get done when there's 200% in the room. So hopefully that's a useful different perspective that you can just play with. And by all means, please phone us back and let us know how it goes.
Any suggestions on how to approach him with that?
play him the recording.
Okay.
that'd be the easy way.
Okay.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
Thanks.
All right, we're coming up on a break. We will be back with more of your calls and more thoughts on the power of compassion right after this.
4300.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're going to get back to your calls in just a minute. Karen and Abdul, you're next in the queue, so hang on if you want to get on. 866-254-1579 is the number. But just before I do, I want to talk very briefly. I don't do this very often, as those of you who listen to the show know, but we just completed a program. My website is geniuscatalyst.com, and we have a part of the site called the Solutions Cafe, where it's the only pay part of the site. There's lots of free stuff on the site, but it's where I call it my sandbox. It's where I try out new programs. We have a 1-year online course that you can do as part of it. We have, a 1-month course called Effortless Success that's a part of it. We've got these, and then we run these monthly programs called Creating the Impossible. And we've just completed a 1-month Creating the Impossible program, and we'll be running a few more this year, and they're included as part of your, Solutions Cafe membership. And I just wanted to sort of just share my awe at what people were able to accomplish. We had a community of, I think there were about 275 people wound up doing it this time through. And the rule of the program is you have to choose a goal that you think you've got less than a 50% chance of succeeding at. So it has to feel pretty impossible, if not completely impossible. And then you just go through and you just keep taking action on it in different ways. And there's monthly messages. And it's amazing. We started a little thread on the forums called "With Failures Like These, Who Needs Success?" Because even though in the month, a lot of people don't actually get all the way to their impossible goal, it's amazing how far you can get. And I'm so inspired by that community. I, as I say, if you listen to the show, you know I don't do this very often. If you're at all interested, join the Solutions Cafe. There's that program. There's other programs. There's complete archives for the radio shows. We've got 12 new coaching videos going up, and there's just all sorts of stuff there. So you go to geniuscatalyst.com, you click on the link for the Solutions Cafe, and I think it's the coolest thing. I would, because I created it, but honestly, it's become a lot more than what I set out to create. That said, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Karen in Tampa. Karen, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Thank you for hanging on.
Compassion. I moved from New York to Florida last year, last May, and I landed a job. I wanted to purchase a home, and I managed to do that. Closed on December 31st, and then I lost my job on January 15th. And, I just don't know what's going on, and
so I can hear that there's a lot of emotion around it. So please understand that if I say anything that sounds like I'm missing the point, it's not deliberate.
Okay.
But in order to do what I do, I've got to ask some questions that don't always sound like I'm very compassionate. So the first question is, Why do you think there's something going on other than you lost a job, which happens, especially in this economy?
Because I went on an interview yesterday, and it's with a fabulous organization, and I got out of it, and I felt like everything went great, and I just had the feeling inside, like, I don't want to be working in an institution, working 9 to 5. And being home for the last 3 weeks here, I'm also an artist. I've been painting a lot, and just loving being in the home. And there's this confusion that's going on inside me.
What's the confusion, Karen?
It's
because so far everything you've said is pretty and I'll play it back to you. You tell me what I'm missing that's confusing. Okay, and again, understand, I'm just trying to get a slightly better sense of what's going on for you right now. But so what I've heard is you got a job, you bought a home, you lost the job, you went on an interview, and the interview went well, but you realized through doing the interview that actually it's not really the kind of work you want to be doing, and that you're really enjoying the time you're spending at home doing art.
It's the kind of work that I would love to do. And the conflict is with me making money and not making money. I need to pay my bills. You know, I don't know what it is that is really going on with me. I don't know if it's just that I'm here home and I'm enjoying my home for the first time because it's brand new, and you know, I'm doing little projects around the house, and I'm actually getting into doing more creative stuff, or is it just a shift in the type of work that I'm going to be doing in the long term?
Let me ask you a slight variation on the question. Do you need to know? At this point, do you need to know whether this is a long-term thing or a sort of for now thing?
I just need to know that I just need to know that I'm going to be able to provide for myself.
Okay. Do you know that you're okay in this moment?
Yes.
Okay, let's start with that. Okay, so there's no lions, no tigers, no bears. If you want to stop and look around, you can. But just right now, you're okay, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we can always come back here. So as we explore this, if it's a little scary, if it's a little uncomfortable, at any moment, we can just come back to right here, right now, and know that, you know, the worst thing that's going to happen is a radio show host is going to make a bad joke at your expense trying to cheer you up. Okay? So from here, from this place of kind of, okay, I'm okay, I want you just, as a little thought experiment, I just want you to imagine that for whatever reason, it takes longer than you had hoped to find a job. What happens to Karen?
I just know that I'm going to be okay.
Okay. See, I know that too, and I know that without even knowing you. And there's something very different about looking at our lives from that place of knowing that we're okay now and that we're going to be okay, than when we look at through them through the filter of the fear and the insecurity and the doubt. So what's going on for you right now?
I just really need to be present with the process and let it play out the way it needs to.
Okay.
Because the universe is, you know, always going to provide for me, and it's never failed. And I get those gut feelings
mm-hmm.
when I do certain things that I really enjoy. So if I keep doing more of those things, then I'll get more of the things that will bring me joy, and I just have to trust that. But it's scary because
it's kind of neat to have. Well, we'll get to the scary bit again in a minute, okay? but let's just acknowledge your incredible wisdom first, and your knowing and your understanding and the depth of your faith and clarity. Can we just briefly acknowledge that?
Yeah.
Because that's home. See, that's the thing. Any one of us, And yeah, I absolutely am including me, right? Any one of us can get caught up in fear thoughts. It's not hard to do. We can get caught up in the insecure feeling and kind of think, oh, my God, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Well, no, none of us are sure what's going to happen. It's just most of the time that doesn't particularly matter. Sometimes we start to think that it does. And so being scared, that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. It just means you're caught up in scary thoughts. And as soon as you kind of, as best you can, let those thoughts go, you come back to that absolute knowing that I can hear in your voice that it's going to be okay. Not only is it okay now, but it's going to be okay. And from that place, from that what you described, just being present with the process, you'll know what's next when you know what's next. And in my experience, that's generally around the time that you need to know. It's like if you think of a trapeze artist, right? A trapeze artist is able to do what they do because they kind of know when they let go of one, there'll be another one there.
Right.
That's my experience of life. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's kind of been like that, you know, and it's like I used up all of my savings for the down payment on the home, so my first mortgage is due, and my unemployment hasn't kicked in, and I just, you know, I'm not afraid about it because I know it's going to get paid, but part of me, the human part of me, just wants to fall apart.
Sure, and that's where compassion comes in, is having compassion for there being a human part of you. And I thank God there's a human part of you. Because honestly, talking to like divine beings all day long is dull. It is, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, bliss is nice, but a little bit of humanity is kind of nice too. And you know what? There's a little bit of real life here. There's a little bit of, wow, it's uncertain right now. It's not clear. And gee, I'm not handling this brilliantly. Okay. That's okay. You know, Bruno Bettelheim wrote a beautiful book in the 30s called A Good Enough Parent. And it was a revolutionary. It was called a Good Enough Parent. And it was revolutionary because, you know, nobody up until that point had ever talked about the possibility of good enough being good enough. That we don't always have to be amazing. We don't always have to be brilliant. In fact, you know, being an average person, having an average day is kind of how it goes for most of us. And sometimes, you know, the accumulation of our average days can lead to some pretty extraordinary results, but we have better days, we have worse days. And if we know that, if our consciousness, to go back to what I was talking about in the first part of the show, if we are conscious of that, that that's just the way that it works, that we have days where it's easier to see through our thoughts and days where it's a little bit harder and days where we know that the sun is out there even though we can't feel it and other days where we think that the cloud has obscured it forever, it's just a little easier to take each time. And each time it's a little less scary. And each time we start worrying about it, we worry about it a little less. Until gradually over time, we get back to our center, to that place in us that knows that we're okay, that knows we're going to be okay. And we can have a real genuine compassion for that part of us that gets caught up from time to time in those scary thoughts. So, you know, one of the questions it writes, they type up a little pricey on my board here. And one of the things they typed up for you is, how do I have compassion for my situation? Let me ask it differently. Do you get how hard Karen's trying to hold it together and make it all work?
Yeah.
And can you kind of just respect her for that and love her for that?
Yeah.
Because I do.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. You know, sometimes good enough is good enough. Keep breathing, kid.
Thank you.
All right, Karen. Thank you for phoning. Feel free to phone back anytime.
Thank cute. Thank you for taking my call.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye. You know, it's funny. I don't know sometimes, you know, I sometimes think, boy, people listening to the show for the first time are going to think, well, he's not very cheery. But look, life is life. You know, Sid Banks used to say life is a contact sport. I don't know of anyone who can get through without getting bumped every now and again. But you don't have to add in more suffering. You don't have to make it worse by thinking that you shouldn't ever have it bad. You don't have to create suffering by thinking you shouldn't be experiencing pain. You know, you don't have to wallow in it. You don't have to spend your whole life there. But when you're in it, you're in it. And if you just kind of stay in it, you'll come out the other side. And you'll reconnect to your natural innate well-being. And you'll begin to hear your natural wisdom speaking again. And it gets easier and easier and easier. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Abdul in Miami. Abdul, hello. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, thank you, Michael. How are you?
Very well.
Well, I mean, you were talking about compassion, and my problem is that I think I have too much of it because, like, every time there's somebody in need, I want to help out. I'm too sensitive, and so I sort of want to turn it off because, like, I'll just feel too much for people. Like, the last lady that was on the line, you know, I'm, like, feeling for her, so, like,
okay, so let me see if I can draw you right away. Let me see if I can draw you a couple of distinctions around it that might help.
Okay.
So the first is the distinction between compassion and empathy. Compassion is I recognize the pain and confusion behind whatever it is that you're going through. And because of that, my love and respect for you is not diminished even if you're behaving like a jerk. It's actually increased because all I see in your jerky behavior is the pain and the confusion. That's compassion. Empathy is where I feel your pain.
Okay.
And where I feel what you feel. And I feel it so deeply that I can't do anything about it because it becomes my pain. I'm not against empathy. In my experience, it's not the most useful place to be of assistance to people from.
Right.
George Bernard Shaw, I think, is the guy who said, we cannot help the poor by becoming one of them. And
right.
He was one of the greatest social crusaders of his time. This was not a man who didn't care. This was a man who understood that if we let ourselves fall out of our own well-being, if we let ourselves get caught up in our own insecurity in response to someone else getting caught up in theirs, we no longer are able in that moment to be of use to them. So that's one thing, the distinction between compassion and empathy.
Okay.
The second distinction that I find very useful around this and around the kind of situation that you described is between feeling compassion and taking action.
Okay.
I can feel compassion for a number, God, pretty much anything that happens in the world on a good day. On a bad day, I don't care about anyone but me. It's all about me. But on a good day, I can feel pretty automatic compassion for anything and everything. However, I am aware that I've got, I think it's a 1,760 minutes in a day.
Right.
And so I have to make choices about what I do with that time. And so it's not about feeling less compassion. It's about being more aware of the choices that you're making about where you'd like to make the difference that you make in the world.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I totally agree with you. But is there any way I could turn off that empathy? It's just I feel like I'm like a giant sponge and I'm just
Yeah,
absorbed.
You know what? There is, and I wouldn't think of it as turning it off so much as being more aware of what's actually going on when you feel it.
Okay.
So generally speaking, and you know, there's lots of theories about this. So I'm not, what I'm about to say isn't true. Okay. It's a way that I understand it.
Okay.
Is when we have a shared humanity, you and me and Karen and everyone listening to the show. Right. There's a part of us that can go, gee, if I were going through that, I would feel that way too. Or there, but for the grace of God, go I. Okay. And it's a wonderful ability we have to sort of project ourselves into someone else's life and imagine what we would feel like. And often, you know, we feel the way that we think they feel.
Right.
But what you're actually doing is, so it's not about turning off the empathy. It's about being more conscious of when you're choosing to project yourself into someone else's circumstances.
I see.
Because if you stay in your shoes, if you stay in your body, you can watch what's happening over there. You can feel compassion for it. You can choose to act to make a difference there without ever fantasizing about how awful it would be if that was you. And one of the reasons that we're taught to make that leap, to project over there, is because there's this belief that some people have, I don't happen to be one of them, that left to their own devices, human beings are callous, Lord of the Flies type creatures. My experience just isn't that. My experience is that actually left to our own devices, we are naturally compassionate and we naturally would do the kind thing. The problem is we're not left to our own devices very often, because we're constantly being pulled on by all the sort of expectations on us and commitments that we've made and things that we think we're supposed to do. And so we think, oh gosh, okay, I better make myself, see, if I feel their pain, then maybe I won't contribute to it anymore. But if I don't feel their pain, I'm such a bad person because I sinned back in the garden with Eve. I forget what I did. I think I ate an apple, something like that. That if I don't feel their pain, I won't do anything about it. Well, that's not my experience. I don't need to suffer to want to alleviate the suffering of others.
Okay.
I don't need that at all. And when you start to see that it's not something, that it's actually something you do to go over there, then it's easier and easier to simply choose not to do that. It's not so much you have to do something else. And what makes it easier is if you get that you will absolutely be of as much, if not more, use to the well-being of the planet when you are in your well-being as you could possibly be when you are in their pain, then it also gets easier to just relax into that. Does that still make sense?
It's perfect.
All right. Thank you very much for phoning in.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, we're so neat. This is me being deep now. We're so neat. What did you learn on the show today? Well, I learned that human beings are neat. But I do think that the way that life here works is just cool. I love the whole energy thing. I love that we can create with thought. I love that there's some force, whatever we call it, that when I plant a seed, knows that if it's a daffodil seed, to grow a daffodil, and if it's a sunflower seed, to grow a sunflower. I find that miraculous, and I love being part of that miracle, partly because if I actually had to do that, if I had to be the one responsible for that, there would be sunflowers growing out of daffodil seeds all day long, and it would just be a mess. So I sort of feel like I should, finish with something deep. I'll finish here. This is going to be a very quick, deep story. It's one of my favorite stories. And it's a story of a Cherokee elder. And he told his grandson, I have two wolves inside me. One of the wolves is good, is loving, is compassionate, is kind, is strong. The other wolf is evil, is cruel, is heartless, is selfish. And these wolves are fighting to the death inside me. And his grandson was captivated by the story and said, well, you know, which wolf will win? And the grandfather just smiles at him and says, the one I feed. And you can feed your insecurities if you want. You can date them. You can have sex with them. You can do whatever you want. Or you can feed that part of you that's naturally loving, naturally well, naturally kind. Have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.